Anyway.
And they had like a competition war between VHS and Betamax.
Betamax.
But yeah. It would have been an interesting thing. Maybe we can do another episode about it.
There was a brief moment before DVDs with laser discs. Yep. I owned a couple of those.
Laser discs.
You owned a couple laser discs? I don't remember ever having like a player for laser discs in our household.
No, I definitely bought them like ironically after the fact. Because I remember I had...
I remember when you were young and had so much disposable income that you could buy laser discs that are
literally garbage.
Hey, I found,
literally garbage. I can't play this ever, but I guess I'll buy it.
Theodore Rex, which is Whoopi Goldberg as a cop, and her partner is a
Triceratop.
He's like a Tyrannosaurus Rex.
Yeah,
that's why it's called Rex in there.
Yeah, exactly. And they're like, but it's like a buddy cop movie, but it's a dinosaur head. But it's pretty much. The one from, what was that called, that movie?
Kung Fury?
Kung Fury, yeah. It's pretty much the same concept as that, only Whoopi Goldberg. Anyway, on Laserdisc. Because, like...
Why, you can't watch it. This is still what I'm coming back
to. It's such a time capsule in itself,
The Theodore Rex thing makes it make more sense. Because that is, like, a full time capsule.
Yeah,
sure.
So, meh.
Did that movie come out the same time Laserdiscs came out,
so
or was
why
it?
Why would they put it on Laserdisc? This is the questions I asked. But I was like, now I gotta own this.
They knew their audience. They were like, the people who are gonna watch this film, they still have Laserdiscs.
Exactly. Hello, you're listening to the Odd Sisters Podcast. I'm Marcy.
I'm Allison.
I'm Julia.
And last week we took you down a journey to Oz.
An unintentional horror film.
This week we're going to talk about an
intentional horror film
that comes off a little
three-way
goofy.
Jinx.
Yeah, actually that's kind of fun. We didn't plan this.
No. Wow. There you go. Full circle.
Yeah.
So we are going to talk about one very specific movie that is amazing, and I think everyone should watch it. But before we get to that, I thought I would go through some history stuff that brought us to this movie, sort of. There is no reason for anything that brought us to this movie, but...
History.
Yeah.
Julia's out.
I actually leaned closer for those listening.
The movie we're going to talk about is a slasher film. I really like watching slasher films in terms of movies that you can just like shut your brain off and watch. Slasher films are probably like my go-to thing.
They're like my least favorite form of movie. Like,
really? I love them.
I love the in terms of movies that I love for being bad, like bad horror movies, like this one that we're going to talk about, like Chopping Mall. Like,
oh, that one was so good. Yeah,
like Chopping Mall and Sleepaway Camp and like I just, they're not my go-to if I want to watch a bad movie.
Sure. Would you rather watch The Room?
Yeah.
She watches bad romantic movies, but she actually likes them.
No, I don't.
She goes like, oh, this is ironic. And then she watches it like 17 times.
I don't. I like sci-fi bad movies and like, you know, whimsical
bad
movies. High spirits.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that stuff too. High Spirits could be a scary movie.
It scared me when I was a kid. The hand coming out of the fish every time.
For anyone who hasn't seen it, that was a weird thing to say.
The hand coming out of the fish.
And for anyone who does or has, knows exactly what I'm talking about. It's scary. I used to like anticipate
it. It's covered in blood.
I'm not going to jump this time. This time I'm not going to jump. I'm going to watch this. I'm not going to jump. And then I jump every time. Go on.
I love that guy, too. Just as a side note.
What else is he in? Jurassic Park?
That's it. You're answering it as I ask.
You're going to ask that.
A parapsychologist. He says everything so weird. Like. I can't think of any of his lines from Jurassic Park. Except for dying on the toilet. That's all I know.
He says something. Never mind. We can't keep going.
So slasher films are very like interesting genre of film. There are obviously some really like intense and like scary slasher films, like Halloween, the original one.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously takes itself very seriously. And then there is definitely this like moment in the late 80s where straight to video became a thing.
Yes.
And it didn't matter about like ratings and box offices and all that stuff didn't matter, because you could just put a movie and it could be rented at Blockbuster by a bunch of teenagers and they would watch it, and I guess you made more profits off of that. There was a some sort of, again, I took out all the VHS history out of this.
Well, if you know that you're not profit. If you know that someone, you're not going to have enough people to come out to the theaters, then skipping that process, I imagine you would save a lot of money. And then it turns out like more kids are going to get away with renting movies that are maybe not age appropriate than actually going into the theater where they are really vigilant and really check on things like that. Like, I rented Pulp Fiction from a video store when I was like 10 years old. And they
you were like 14.
12 years old.
Meet in the middle.
And they literally let me and my two friends walk out with it. And no questions.
Did they give you a round of applause?
Good choice.
Yeah.
It's like how you're less likely to get ID'd at the liquor store if you bought a bottle of wine.
Yeah. Just go really bold.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I know what I'm doing.
I've got class. That's not what Pulp Fiction says. Yeah.
You go in and get like a 2 liter of like Growers peach cider, and they're, I'm going to need to see three pieces of ID from you just to make sure.
Yeah,
exactly.
Why would you want this? It's been sitting on the shelf for years.
Yeah.
Growers. Okay.
Has everyone, never mind.
What?
I remember only one instance of drinking Growers, and I immediately threw all of it back
up. Yeah, the first time I got drunk was on like grape. Or like something like that. Like it was
fruity
purple.
Growers.
Yeah, it was like a berry Growers. I was in a living room and then I just walked out the door and threw up in the tree and went back.
In the tree? Like you climbed up?
No, like a hedge. Sorry, wrong word.
Oh, okay.
Hedge.
No, I've never done that.
Anyway, if anyone's drunk, like a lot of Growers and not thrown up, they should message us because I want to know who this person is.
I mean, I'll message you right now.
Like three, two or three.
But have you had 16. It like drunk?
Yeah.
You're amazing.
I know. This is what I've been saying the whole time.
Okay, so before we get to like the crazy, crazy fun slasher movies, I feel like horror had a interesting timeline,
mm-hmm.
and the genre and the way the style of films switched a whole lot. That cat really wants out of that room. We locked her in.
I can't do anything about that.
Speaking of horror movies.
Yeah.
The cat. Starting with what is usually credited as one of the first horror movies ever made. Marcy, you know what it is?
The first horror movie ever? Oh, isn't it the Castle of... No.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Castle
Le,
of...
Le Manoir du Diable.
Yeah.
Which is a silent film that came out in 1896. It's directed by French filmmaker Georges Méliès.
We talked about this one. It's got like the dance and skeleton thing. It's not dancing, but like it's very like stop motion and like the girl like... looks in a mirror and all of a sudden there's like a poof and like the like devil comes out and like, it's just very like
so the film is not necessarily scary, quote, it is intended to evoke amusement and wonder from its audience, but as it's the first film ever that involved ghosts and demons and skeletons and specters and all that spooky stuff, it's often cited as like the first supernatural horror movie. So the horror genre really got going in the 1920s with the release of such famous movies as The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari, two Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde movies, Haxan, The Headless Horseman, Nosferatu, The Phantom Monster, The Phantom of the Opera, The Bat, The Bells, The Terror, and The Man Who Laughs, as well as others.
Wow.
Lots of other movies. And 1931 saw the release of both Dracula starring Bela Lugosi and Frankenstein starring Boris Karloff.
Phantom of the Opera is pretty cool because it's just like being afraid of somebody who has like a physical disability or a physical abnormality.
I was taking awesome? Selfies of myself with like a filter on, and there was one filter on Instagram that was called Glow, and the way it lit up my face, I looked like I was wearing a Phantom of the Opera mask. I don't know if that's because I'm super pale and it made my face glow or if that is the filter, but I was really sad.
Like, oh, you're already glowing.
Aren't we all?
It was very upsetting. It was like this like big sheen on like just half of my forehead and down half. And I was like, oh, cool.
Pretty.
Thanks.
Did you just start singing to yourself?
This is the music.
Yeah.
This is the hideout. 1931 also saw the release of another Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde movie.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
But then something happened in 1934, which was that the Motion Picture Production Code, also known as the Hays Code, came into effect. So for anyone who doesn't know, the code was a set of industry moral guidelines which, quote, prohibited a picture from lowering the moral standards of those who see it so as not to wrongly influence a specific audience of views, including women, children, lower class, and those of susceptible minds.
Which wow. is just insane when you think
there
about it.
There was a longer part of this quote that at one point they were saying, like, they've thought at that time that they couldn't just instigate, like, a rating system because people might bring their children to see something that's a higher rating anyway. And then they're technically committing thought crime mm-hmm. by making children view something. And
I was thought like, crime? Thought crime?
Precog.
Yeah. Like, what?
So under the code, movies could not have any nudity or overt portrayals or references of sex. They couldn't show characters consuming alcohol or taking drugs. They could not use revenge as a theme, and they could not glorify violence, which is basically the three things that most horror movies, I think, have
yeah.
in them.
Yeah.
Now, anyway, they also could not include any topics considered perverse. And these topics included homosexuality and miscegenation, which is interracial couples.
Yeah.
Those things were perverse. So yeah. 1930s was a fun time. And it also required that movies uphold the sanctity of marriage, but simultaneously they couldn't show a man and woman in bed together, even if they were married. Ooh. So
yeah, wasn't there like a bunch, well, you might talk about it later, but wasn't there a bunch of things where like Alfred Hitchcock was like the first person to like...
Yeah.
Show, like, in a Psycho. Like, yeah.
Yeah, the flushing toilet the flushing for the first toilet, time. It, yeah. mm-hmm. So, horror movies were basically ruined for a long time. The movies of the 1940s are, like, all sequels to Frankenstein and Dracula, and they meet Abbott and Costello and yeah. blah, 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 blah,
well,
blah.
I mean, they tried to keep it fun because the world was...
also that.
Not doing great at that time, so...
But they couldn't show anything scary. Like, everything was just...
Yeah.
You know.
Musicals.
Musicals, lots of musicals.
Yes, lots of musicals.
So fortunately, though, the Hays Code was in effect until 1968, but technically its influence started to, like, lessen into the 1950s. So that's, like, when, like, House of Wax came out with Vincent Price. Yeah. And then
You don't mean Paris Hilton?
No.
Vincent Price, did she take the same role?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was the twist ending of that movie.
Yeah.
And then in 1960, Alfred Hitchcock released Psycho.
Oh.
So this is a movie that not only features a deranged, sexually repressed, knife-wielding killer, but also has an opening scene with actress Janet Leigh lying on a bed in her underwear mm-hmm. while her shirtless co-star playing her boyfriend is standing over
the
her.
Implication of sex.
Yes. Definitely implying that.
I never.
Which is very, very, but going from like the 1934 where they're like, it's, there was like some sort of Catholic guy that was really involved in the
No one is code. Surprised.
Yeah. And it's like very Catholic, like the whole sanctity of marriage. There was yeah. like, people can't steal something and then not be punished. And like, you can't blasphemy. And like, there's a whole bunch of other stuff in there. And to go from that to like the first 2 seconds of this movie is like,
well, she steals something and she gets
sex.
Punished.
Like, mm-hmm. I guess she does, but she doesn't get punished for stealing.
No. It's an unrelated.
My goodness.
She is not punished for stealing. She's just a victim. She's a victim.
Yeah.
So the Psycho would go on after having like all those rules and restrictions and having a movie that's the first scene time you see a toilet getting flushed and having her in her underwear at the very beginning, mm-hmm. obviously having slept with someone she's not married to. Psycho would go on to be nominated for 4 Academy Awards. And inspiring a new horror genre, which is the slasher film.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a subgenre of horror films.
There's not a lot of
there's the one, the shower scene, mm-hmm. which is pretty
it's stressful.
Violent. Yeah.
It's more stressful. Like, it's more suspenseful to me, if anything. Like, obviously, at the time, that would have been crazy to see somebody getting, like, stabbed.
Yeah.
When especially you weren't allowed to
show stuff.
I think
like that.
One of my favorite things about Psycho is how it, if you had never, I mean, I'm not sure what trailers were like at that time, but if you had didn't know anything about what the movie was, mm-hmm. if someone just put it on and you watch the beginning bit, it really takes a long time for you to be like, oh, this is a movie about a maniac.
Yeah. I don't think that they did that. I think that they just had posters and they would just be like, theaters would just be showing a movie. Right. And you just walk by and be like,
I had trailers. What are you talking about?
Really?
Yeah.
Like they were big? Like that's why people would go and see them?
They must have. I don't know. I mean, TV was a thing at this point, yeah. right?
But they also had trailers like before movies, and they had like, there was just constantly things playing at the cinema. So they have like the newsreel and the trailers. And
oh, right. Goofy cartoons.
Goofy cartoons. Roger Rabbit.
Yeah.
So the slasher films is a subgenre of horror films involving a psychopath stalking and murdering a group of people, usually by use of bladed tools. Slasher films are built around stalk and murder sequences and, quote, draw upon the audience's feelings of catharsis, recreation, and displacement as related to sexual pleasure.
Wow, those are the rules.
Then the rules. Yeah. So following,
we already talked about this, kind of.
Following the release of Psycho in 1963, Francis Ford Coppola released one of his first movies, which is called Dementia. It's a film about a family gathering at an Irish castle to commemorate a relative's death, only to be murdered off one by one.
Oh, I've never seen that.
Really?
Yeah.
I'll give it to you.
Soon into the 70s, we get more horror movies. So The Exorcist was released in 1973 and was the most commercially successful horror film.
I think Dementia 13 is still on the like banned movie list.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I don't think it was ever off.
Interesting.
When Schlockbuster was still around, which is a really cool offbeat video store that had like really weird shit.
R.I.P.
Yeah. He had a wall of the banned films and it was still on there.
Wow. Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So The Exorcist was released in 1973 and was the most commercially successful horror movie until the following year when the low-budget independent film The Texas Chainsaw Massacre was released.
I can't imagine seeing either one of those movies when they first came out. Like, it must have been the scariest thing people had ever seen. Especially, I mean,
well, people
probably thought Texas Chainsaw Massacre too, but like, sorry, as well. but The Exorcist, especially like when there's so many like religious people being like, you can't show any of this stuff. And then all of a sudden there's like that must be like such a nightmare for those people. Like, right?
Yes and no. I mean, it still has the good triumphs over evil kind of themes to it. It's like, it's terrifying, but it fits within their
but like
dogma.
Yeah.
Yes, but I think
the Texas Chainsaw Massacre would have been more upsetting because Leatherface's family is like conservative country family that cannibalizes people.
Also, it doesn't really have an ending, does it? Like, it's someone like running away.
She gets in a car and he chases after her, and then he throws the chainsaw in the air. And he like cut himself.
Yeah.
In that scene, he like spins around in a circle and like.
He throws a fit.
Is it a musical?
No, he's like having like a temper tantrum. Like, she got away.
We were going to eat her.
Yeah. But she got away. And she's like looking in the back. It's like a truck or something. Mm-hmm. She's like looking at the back window.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That's how it ends.
Yep.
Yeah. So it doesn't have as much of a satisfying ending is what I was trying to say.
No, the killer doesn't die for sure.
The killer doesn't die. Yeah, he's still out there. But also.
She gets away.
Sequels. And she gets away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then in 1977, Wes Craven released The Hills Have Eyes.
Yes, he did.
So, and it was another huge financial success as
another,
well.
Another, like, redneck, like,
right.
Backwoods.
Did you know, this was on Wikipedia, it's a modernization of the Sonny Bean legend. Did you know that? Have you heard the Sonny Bean?
Yeah.
The like, weird Scottish family that lived in the cave? That's apparently what that's based on.
All right.
Cool. I was like, the fuck?
I don't know what that is, but it's okay. Don't explain it to me.
It's like
I'll figure it out.
Scottish cannibal family.
Yeah. Mm. No, The Hills Have Eyes is redneck cannibal family.
I mean, yeah, I guess. I can see it.
Do they live in a cave?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they do. Yeah. Yeah.
It all lines up.
Then.
I just didn't put the two together. I mean, why would you?
No.
Wes Craven did. And then in 1978, John Carpenter released the epitome of slasher films, Halloween.
Yes.
Starring Janet Leigh from Psycho's daughter, Jamie Lee Curtis, as the film's heroine.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which is a fun connection.
That is really cool.
So Halloween grossed over $70 million worldwide, quote, selling more than 20 million tickets in North America and becoming the most profitable independent film until being surpassed by Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in 1990.
Wow.
Appropriate.
Wow.
That has nothing to do with anything. I just really
want to like throw that in there. $70 million like adjusted to now, or is that like $70 million like in the 70s?
It didn't say on there. It said the selling over more than 20 million tickets.
Okay.
So that's probably pretty close.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
Wowzers.
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
So in Halloween, I'm not going to go into the entirety of Halloween, but just for future reference to slasher films, Michael Myers starts his career as a killer at the age of 6 when he kills his teenage older sister after she's just finished being very intimate with her boyfriend. You see him like walking down the stairs, aww, putting a shirt on, and then he goes upstairs and his sister's sitting naked in her room brushing her hair, as you do. And then it flash forwards to 15 years later, he escapes from his hospital prison thing, and he spends the rest of the movie stalking implied virginal Jamie Lee Curtis and then killing all her sexually promiscuous friends.
Mm-hmm.
So although John Carpenter is adamant that Halloween is not a morality play and that the whole virgin sexual promiscuous thing has mm-hmm. nothing to do with anything, it's just a horror film, a lot of subsequent filmmakers took the whole sex equals death formula,
yes,
and ran with it.
Mm-hmm.
And 2 years later, you get the release of Friday the 13th, which is that's basically the entire yep. plot of that movie. And it grossed more than $59.7 million, selling nearly 15 wow. million tickets in North America.
Who did that one? Do we know?
I didn't write it down.
Okay.
Sorry.
So it's not like one of the classic, like, I'm assuming, because no, we would know.
So. I mean, I'm sure somebody does.
And then
I'm sure someone directed it.
Yeah. I think his name's Sean. Sean something.
Yeah, I don't know.
In 1981, both Halloween 2 and Friday the 13th Part 2 Sean were Cunningham. Released. There we go. Look, I knew it somewhere deep in my brain. In 1981, both Halloween 2 and Friday the 13th Part 2 were released. So they're so popular, they both get a sequel. Mm-hmm. And 7.8 million tickets were sold for Jason Voorhees and 9.2 million tickets were sold for Michael Myers. So even...
What team are you on?
The 80s saw a boom in slasher films, some released in theaters and some going straight to home video. You get My Bloody Valentine, you get Prom Night, you get Bloody Birthday, Don't Go to Sleep, Alone in the Dark.
Ooh.
And a lot of these movies are coming out and being criticized for being super misogynistic and really enforcing violence against women. Because
did you say Last House on the Left?
Last House on the Left came out before that.
Right.
It came out before The Hills Have Eyes.
Holy shit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I love that out because I don't really like. Well, I don't want to really want to talk about it, and it's not a slasher film, so it's just like let's ignore that. Yeah. I think it came out in 1974, something like that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So then in 1982, I mean, that's
true, absolutely true.
In 1982,
I mean, as much as we love them, like
yes,
yeah,
it is.
That's absolutely yeah. true.
In 1982, this movie is released that is called Slumber Party Massacre. It's originally written by a novelist and outspoken feminist named Rita Mae Brown, and it was written to be a parody of the slasher genre. But then producers got a hold of it and kind of rewrote it to make it more of a serious slasher movie.
Of course they did.
But fortunately, the script was given to female director Amy Holden Jones, who did direct it as a serious slasher film, but kept a lot of the like feminist themes and stuff like mm-hmm. that in the movie.
Okay. Cool, cool.
Okay, so the first Slumber Party Massacre has two teenage heroines in it, one named Trish, whose parents have gone away for the weekend, and her next-door neighbor, Valerie. The villain is a guy called Ross Thorne, who's just escaped from some sort of mental hospital thing, mm-hmm. and his weapon of choice is a massive power drill. And yes, if you're thinking that is a very phallic weapon for him to have, yeah. it is intentionally done that way. It is supposed to be that. According to the director Jones, the central metaphor of the film is about a virgin's fear of sex.
Yeah.
So
okay.
The plot of the movie is that Trish invites her high school friends over to her house for a slumber party. She also invites Valerie, who lives next door, but Valerie can't come because she's supposed to be babysitting her younger sister, Courtney. And then Trish and her friends all hang out and they drink and they smoke pot, and Rush Thorne kills them off one by one. He also kills off their boyfriends who show up. All goes through the whole thing until only Trish, Valerie, and Courtney are left alive. And the guy who plays the killer, he does such a good job of being super creepy. I watched like a little interview with him where he said he got his inspiration for the role after reading Helter Skelter. Ooh. So he is all in to the creep factor of this role. And as the movie, like, he's like that quiet, like, stalking guy. He's wearing like a denim jacket and jeans, and that's a giant power drill. But as the movie goes on and he's like actually interacting with the characters and talking to them, he is super creepy. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the movie, Valerie somehow gets a machete and she kills Thorn, but not before hacking at his drill with the machete and cutting it in half, which is very, very symbolic.
Yes. Yes. Okay. That's amazing.
But the best thing about Slumber Party Massacre is that it gave us Slumber Party Massacre 2, which is the most insane, weird slasher horror musical comedy.
It was ahead of its time.
Ever existed.
It's now a very big thing. That would be very profitable.
Isn't that a category at the Golden Globes?
Yes.
So, this one is written and directed by Deborah Brock, so keeping with the female writer, female director. Mm-hmm. And the heroine this time around is Courtney, who was Valerie's sister in the first one. Quote, set years after the first film, now teen Courtney is a senior in high school, plays in a band with her three close friends. She also happens to suffer night terrors about a drill-wielding maniac from the first film, only this time he's a young greaser with a massive drill bit guitar. So
he is such a weird character design.
Yeah. Yeah.
For a killer. I love killer.
It. So he looks like one of the Lost Boys. Like, not, sorry, like the Lost Boys, Lost right. Boys. Not like Peter Pan.
Yeah, I should does. Clarify. And he's very much like Freddy Krueger, kind of. He keeps popping up in her dreams.
Yeah.
But then he pops up in the, so they, her friends, it's her 18th birthday.
There's no explanation for it.
No. It's her 18th birthday. She keeps having dreams about this guitar. He has a red electric guitar and the top of the neck is a drill. Yeah. And they go away for her birthday to a condo.
Yeah.
And
which her, is empty.
Yeah, her three friends are there, her crush boyfriend comes, and then two other guys show up, and she goes off with her crush boyfriend and they start trying to have sex, and then the driller killer shows up and drills the boyfriend. Yeah. And kills him and then proceeds to chase all of the other characters throughout the house.
Yeah.
Until he's inevitably set on fire.
Something that's really strange is that, and Marcy pointed it out as well while we were watching it, is it takes so long for, like, the first kill to happen.
It
like,
does.
When like an hour.
Yeah. You're it's like, just shy of an hour. And it's only, like, an hour and
it's
20
not,
minutes?
Yeah, it's not
an hour and a half?
Movie. It is the first half of the movie is, I mean, he kind of pops up in her dreams a bit, mm-hmm. but it is mostly, like, they're in a band. They sing songs.
Yeah, it's like and an 80s, like teen.
Yeah. And when we say musical, like it is.
They sing
it's
songs.
So, the band sing, or the, I think two girls have like a carpool karaoke moment, and then they sing as their band. And then when they get to the condo, they have like a slumber party dance scene.
The dancing at the camera is a weird choice.
Yeah.
Not and a then fan. When the killer shows up, he kills, I think, half of them. Mm-hmm. He kills half of them, and then he gets into the house, and he puts his sunglasses on, and he goes, now it's time for the fun part, and then he has a 2.5 minute song.
With lights and smoke machines.
And he's,
and
like
it's
dancing
a music
around
video.
Like crazy.
This is the MTV generation.
Yes, right before he drills a girl to death with his guitar.
Yeah.
It is insane.
I would be pretty terrified if someone was dancing and singing at me down a hallway and I couldn't leave. No.
Like, but also they were gonna kill you.
Definitely. Yeah. Like, it just adds to the terror.
It's bananas.
It's insane. Yeah. It's completely insane.
It's totally insane.
And like this guy, like it's so hard to just, he is so into it. Like I was watching, we were watching like a clip from it, and I was just like, he just did like 6 insane moves, like back to back to back.
He does this weird like knee kind of like move down, like a half splits thing, while he's like shimmying his glasses around.
Yeah.
And then like slicks back his hair. It was just like, holy.
It's like, that was like 4 insane things all at once.
Yeah, I think I read a review that described him as Norman Bates meets Elvis Presley.
Yep. Accurate.
And we always wanted them to meet.
Yes. I mean, that's
and meld into one person.
He kind of makes me think of, like, John Travolta in, like, Grease a little
bit. Yeah. I thought, like, Risky Business, like, Tom Cruise kind of, like,
It was bizarre.
It was a lot.
It's super weird.
It was a lot of different things.
But I also like highly if you like bad horror movies, I think you have to see it.
Yeah, definitely.
It's you have to see it to believe it.
Yeah. It's pretty insane. Good. The first one too. The first one is according to both the women that kind of directed it, they said the producer, who I didn't write down his name, his only request for horror movies was that they have violence and nudity in them. And so the first one has this Roger really Corman. The girls are on like a high school basketball team, and they like there's a scene where they're like playing or practicing a game, and then they go to the shower, and there's like a really long like full nude 18-year-old girls in a shower. The actresses are probably way older, but that's the implication. And the female director got a lot of criticism for it because it was quote-unquote exploitative, and she was like she had like a really good comeback where she was like, if a man directed this, you wouldn't be saying like that, like,
for sure.
So there is a little bit of that in it. I think there's less in the second one.
Yeah, a lot less.
But the first one is like has some like really good creepy moments in it, again with the drill bit and the central metaphor being a virgin's fear of sex. There is a lot of thrusting drills, and lots of close-up shots on drills, but like it is
that's hilarious.
She said something like, I didn't realize it until later, but I think this is the central metaphor. And I was like, how did you not realize that till later when you were filming it? And you were like, let's make sure the drill goes like in and out a couple more times.
Yeah. Like, that's a very poignant accent.
Yeah.
But I'm also curious because I know the producers took the script that the woman wrote as the parody. Like, they took it and rewrote it. But I bet she did, like, she had to have done, like,
way
a
more.
Drill on purpose. Yeah, like, that has to have been what the parody was.
Because, like, how impractical at the same time. Know, like, right? it adds an element of, like, fantasy to it.
Yeah.
Because, but if that was your weapon of choice, like...
Yeah. Oh
my gosh. It's so good.
It's amazing. You just have to watch it.
Yeah, it's pretty insane. The guitar is pretty crazy.
Yeah. It's so much fun. There's so many like bad slasher films on this one. It's just like, and there's is definitely some parts that are like you're laughing because it's very unintentional. Like, it's just like bad acting, bad dialogue. But
yeah.
It's
yeah.
so much fun.
But they knew it was going to be bad to a certain point. Like, there's no way they like, this is going to be excellent when you have like musical numbers of like murderer.
Yeah.
Like dancing
Maybe
around.
Maybe you never know what's going to happen.
There is also a really That's good true. Article. I think it was on like film.com or something. That this person wrote that it is the film, there's like a lot of really weird shots where it's close-ups on the characters and that it's supposed to be like an internal struggle with the Courtney's bisexuality. And that they said like a lot of the horror films will take do killer point of view shots. So that's where they come across as being like super misogynistic. So it'll be like the character watching like the girls go skinny dipping and it's like very like male gaze kind of thing, whereas this one they said it's Courtney's gaze, so it's like a girl looking at other girls and looking at guys in a specific way, and then the driller killer only shows up when she's like having dreams about her boyfriend or like she's in bed with her boyfriend, and then the driller killer shows up, and then at the end she doesn't escape him even though she thinks she does. It's interesting. Maybe we can post, I'll post it on Facebook if you follow our Facebook page, and then
people
can read it if they want. I don't know how much of that is like accurate. Was intentional with the filming or if that's just how someone read into it, but
I'm sorry, I kind of missed the beginning. That was somebody who worked on it who said that, or is
no,
it just
it was
somebody
like a film. It was like a film critic person.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm. Is the general vibe is very uncomfortable in the entire thing. Like, it's just like I'm not surprised that somebody
read it. It's weird when you're like, you're not sure if you're actually supposed to laugh at something.
Yeah.
It just puts your mood in a weird, like, am I making fun of this or are we all laughing together?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, did you think it was going to be good or were you just like, fuck it, let's just go?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would go into like more of what happens, but I just think people should watch it.
Alison just wanted to draw attention to this film.
I just needed to point out to you that it exists and you should
also
go watch it.
Also Chopping Mall.
And Chopping Mall. Oh my gosh. Chopping Mall was so good.
Yeah, that was great.
This movie, so Slumber Party Massacre 2 has 4.6 out of 10. I don't know what it is. Stars on IMDb?
Stars.
Yeah. Star rating. And its audience score on Rotten Tomatoes is 37%. It does not have a Rotten Tomatoes critic score. When you look it up, it just says unavailable.
They didn't even bother.
I went to go watch that new movie, The Golden or The Goldfinch or whatever.
Oh, yeah. It had like 6% or something.
It's got like 20% on Rotten Tomatoes. Oh, yeah. But that's like, that movie is 30%.
Yeah. 37%.
I go out to see a lot of movies, and that trailer was like really, it was one of those ones that played like before everything. Mm-hmm. And I probably saw that trailer against my will like 6 times. Could not tell you what that movie's about. They were the most confusing trailers I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, it looked pretty crazy.
And I was just like, and then they'd show like another actor like 2 seconds to the end. I was like, didn't even know they were in this movie until that moment.
Yeah, I actually think I thought the same thing.
I was like, I have no idea. Every time I turned to Jane, I was like, still don't know what it's about. Like, could not tell you.
I guess the movie kind of sucked too then. So maybe it was about nothing.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, Slumber Party Massacre 2 is about being awesome.
That it's about terrible. Friendship.
It's about friendship.
It's about friendship and it's love. It's about kindness.
What it takes to be in a band with your 3 best friends.
It takes hard work.
Yeah.
Hard work. Yeah. And double dream fake out at the end.
Apparently. Oh, yes. Oh, if somebody is listening and they like doing compilations of things, if they could just make me a compilation of like dream fake outs, they're favorite thing in the world. That's why I love like Nightmare on Elm Street, like all of them so much. Because I love, like, dream fake-outs. Mm-hmm. There's a really good one in Wicker Man with Nicolas Cage where he, like...
Is it with the boss or the train?
No. I mean, yes, all of those. But there's one where he, like, he thinks that he sees his daughter, like, drowning under this dock. So he, like, jumps in and brings her up. But then, like, she grabs him under the water and he starts drowning. And then he goes, oh, and he wakes up. And it's like, oh, it all was a dream. And then he looks down and the daughter's in his arms and he wakes up again. Oh, yeah. I love it. It's so fucking funny. And then he wakes up again and he's just on the dock by himself. And it's just, it's incredible.
Like, why?
It's why incredible. And it really helps that it's Nicolas Cage. Like, if it was anybody else, like, it'd be like, okay, that was kind of funny, but, like, he's just such a psycho.
That's amazing. I want to watch that.
It's great. And there's, yeah, all the trains. Like, you're literally looking out a window and then, like, is it a train?
I think it's a train. Or a bus. That's what I was, I know, yeah. It's like.
It's a truck.
It's a giant mode of transportation.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And it keeps the worst part about it, like this isn't funny at all, but it's like that shock, you know, when you're like shocked so you kind of laugh, like, but it's always like a kid that's getting hit with this giant truck and you never see it coming. Like every single time it's just like this girl like looking out the water on the boat.
Point, yeah, it's on the boat.
On the boat. She's like looking out towards the water and then this truck just comes and takes her out. It's a great movie. I highly recommend it.
I've never seen it.
What?
Oh, that is a crime. It's incredible.
Is it the one on the island?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, then I have seen it.
The female island.
Yes, yes, yes.
You obviously just didn't find it as funny as I did.
Or talk about misogynistic movies. Things. That one is just
worst. Yeah.
Yeah.
So bad.
So uncomfortable.
I've seen it with riff tracks.
There we go.
For sure.
So it was funny in different ways. Yeah. Like they were making fun of it.
Yeah.
But you didn't realize like how awkward it actually is.
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Because it's pretty amazing. Highly recommend. Slumber Party Massacre and Wicker Man.
Yeah. These are our recommendations.
Yeah. All right.
If you want to watch a good slasher movie, you should watch 1978 Halloween, and then don't watch any of the sequels except for the 2019 version of Halloween.
Yeah, that was really good, actually. Really good. I liked that one.
I feel like that... Yeah, it was good.
Also, like, Jamie Lee Curtis is just even more badass
she's
now.
Amazing. Yeah,
she's incredible.
Maybe you could watch Halloween 2, actually. You could watch Halloween 1, Halloween 2, and then...
Not the Rob Zombie ones, though. They're garbage. Wait, he did those, right?
That's the 2019.
No. The one that just came out with Jamie Lee Curtis in it again.
No, apparently not. Oh, I haven't seen that then.
Oh my gosh, it's so good. You have to see it.
No, that was like 2000 and... Oh, it
Must
have been like 2006 or 7, the Rob Zombie one.
Yeah.
Like, it must have
time.
Been.
What is time?
Where does it go?
How does it go so fast?
Where am I? Well, thanks, Allison.
Yeah.
I'm glad we brought this to the attention. This is going to be our goal when we terrified people on our last podcast with
Buddy. 2007. That was such a good 26%.
Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah. Slumber Party Massacre had more. Just saying.
It did.
Well, actually, it didn't have an existing score. So
no. What's its audience score?
6.1 out of 10.
Okay. So that's doing better.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're talking about.
Thanks, Allie.
Terrible movie.
Follow us on Instagram at Odd Sisters Podcast, on Facebook at Odd Sisters Podcast, and on Twitter at Odd Sisters.
Sounds good.
Yeah. Say hi. Okay, bye.
Hi. Oh.